Our gathering song for this morning is number 73, just one verse, the summer verse, which you'll understand when you turn to the song in your hymnal. You know what's confusing about that is that the autumn one starts with summertime. You have to really read in this congregation to get the things right. Good morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Hendersonville on this first day of summer. I am so glad you all are here. We are a welcoming congregation that supports and encourages a willingness to learn from many sources, including the teachings of the world's religions. Many of our members come from other faith traditions. The atmosphere of free thought and respect for the rights of individuals inspires personal, spiritual growth. In other words, whoever you are, wherever you are, whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your faith journey, you are welcome here. And I hope you'll join us after the worship service. We'll have coffee and treats downstairs, and that'll be a chance for us all to visit with each other a little more. I do want to draw your attention to the bulletin. There's, like I said, you have to read in this congregation. There's a lot of really good information in there and announcements, but we do have one special announcement.
Hi, I'm Joe Robustelli of the Concert Committee, and I'm here to remind you that Brother Sun will be here Saturday, July 15th at 7 p.m. This is the last year of this nationally known award-winning group. We'll be together. You can pick up tickets downstairs. I'll be there at the ticket table. If you already paid for them, I'll give you your ticket. You could buy tickets, or you can reserve tickets and pay later. So I'm saying bring your friends, bring your neighbors, and bring your enemies, and we'll all have a good time. Thank you.
Has anybody here seen Brother Sun before? Yeah, a few of you. Okay, well, for those of you who have not seen them, you are in for a real treat. They really are. All three of them are very talented in their own right, and when they come together, it is really, really something special. And not only that, but they really... A lot of their songs and music are reflective of our values as a congregation. And they're actually going to do a service the next day and be here and present. It's going to be an amazing weekend. Really, it's going to be amazing. You need to get your tickets. You need to come. It's going to be fantastic.
And the service will not be the same as...
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a whole different thing. Yeah, so if you don't come to the service thinking you didn't miss the concert, because you'll be missing out. Come to the concert. All right. Our speaker today is Rabbi Rachel Jackson. She was ordained in 2015 and came to Agudas Israel congregation here in Hendersonville in July of that year. Before that, she worked for biopharmaceutical, biofuel, and hazardous waste companies in Colorado. She was an analytical chemist. Analytical chemist. So a little bit of a different background than a lot of our speakers. In addition to the experience gained in congregations as a student, which included congregations not only in Ohio and Indiana, but in Alaska. So she's also been a fellow at the Cincinnati Jewish Community Center. And while there, one of the programs she created and spearheaded was Experiments with a Message, directed at preschoolers using science experiments as a way to teach Jewish values. So I am, I'm so excited to hear what you have to say today. An important facet of Rabbi Jackson's rabbinate, is that how you pronounce it? Okay, good. I meant to check with you before. She seamlessly melds Judaism and modernity to integrate natural law and Jewish living. She is married, and her husband, Daniel, they have a love bug son named Adrian. And for anybody who does not know, UUFH has a special relationship with Agudas Israel because our congregation worshiped there while our sanctuary was being remodeled several years ago. So we are pleased and honored to be able to welcome their rabbi to our pulpit in continuation of that relationship.
Thank you, Jan and Catherine. Our chalice lighting. The International Council of Unitarians and Universalists, ICUU, distributes a new chalice lighting reading each month. Congregations are invited to use it during worship services and to introduce it as a global chalice lighting. This reading is from the Assembly of Christian Unitarians of Burundi. When people meet, endless possibilities emerge. New cultural experiences and openness to new ways of understanding and doing things. A special attention to the other and a sense of service beyond self development. Today, this morning, let us light the chalice for openness, willingness to grow, enriching curiosity, and active cooperation.
Our opening words is a poem by Denise Levertov called Beginners. And it's actually in your hymnal, but I'm not going to tell you what number because I want you to just listen. We have only begun to love the earth. We have only begun to imagine the fullness of life. How could we tire of hope? So much is in bud. How can desire fail? We have only begun to imagine justice and mercy, only begun to envision how it might be to live as siblings with beast and flower, not as oppressors. Surely our river cannot already be hastening into the sea of non-being. Surely it cannot drag in the silt all that is innocent. Not yet, not yet. There is too much broken that must be mended, too much hurt that we have done to each other that cannot yet be forgiven. We have only begun to know the power that is in us if we would join our solitudes in the communion of struggle. So much is unfolding that must complete its gesture. So much is in bud. It's number 648 in your hymnal if you want to look at that. Our opening hymn this morning is... I think right now is a good time to pause and everybody turn your cell phones off. Check and make sure. I was just telling the rabbi that my father's a Methodist minister, but he's retired. He still gives sermons sometimes. And one Sunday morning, I didn't know he was actually preaching that Sunday, and I called him right in the middle of his sermon. So it can happen to anybody, but everybody turn your cell phone off now. And now we'll sing the opening hymn, number 38, Morning Has Broken. If you're like me, that song, I never know whether I want to sing recreation or recreation. I think either should fit. The poem I just read had the line, "We have only begun to know the power that is in us if we would join our solitudes in the communion of struggle. Now is the time when we share our heartaches and celebrations. We do this silently and symbolically by placing a stone in the water, understanding that our hopes and fears ripple out beyond our own selves to be spread and shared together. If you have a sense that you must speak, you may, but please be brief and remember it's not a time for announcements or politics. This is personal. When those who would come forward have done so, I will place stones in the water for those who wish to remain in their seats. You may come forward.
This stone is for my friend Kathy Birmingham, 50 years of friendship. She died peacefully in New York this past week, and I was there with her for a few days. I'm grateful to have seen her.
What's your name? I'm
Catherine Elder.
Let's sing from song number 402, From You I Receive.
Good morning. I am so thankful to be here this morning. And before I get into my reflection, I actually realized on my way over here that I probably should define two things. The first you actually saw up on the marquee, it says Ani Ma'amin. That's how you pronounce it. Ani Ma'amin, which is Hebrew for I believe or I have faith. And the other thing that I want to define is a modern way of understanding a term messianic age, right? And that the term Messiah or messianic might give us some heebie-jeebies. It might warm us. So I just want to sort of clarify that when I say those words later. What we're looking for when I say these words is more of a concept of sitting with the divine, of having peace throughout the world, of Garden of Eden actualized. That's sort of what we're looking for, this calmness, this contentment that we so seek. So I want those images rather than maybe any other images that you came in with. So this morning, I want to talk to you about the F word. It's dirty, and we don't say it very often. And sometimes, maybe when someone's frustrated, it might slip out. But then it gets quickly shushed. And uttering this word can sometimes make heads turn and eyes pop. And today, I want to talk to you about the F word. F-A-I-T-H. Faith. Because I'm here to break the silence. I'm here to put a crack in that armor, that liberal armor, that welcoming armor that we say, well, I don't know if I can talk about it. And to charge each of us to acknowledge, process, and act in faith. At the very least, as I said in the little teaser, faith involves a realization that there is something greater than ourselves, something that we realize pushes us to better ourselves and aims into the world. But more than realizing, faith requires us to be active participants in fashioning this messianic Garden of Eden. It starts with each one of us, and it grows like a ripple in a pond. Elie Wiesel, may his memory be for a blessing, noted author, Holocaust survivor, memorably expresses some of what I have in mind when he wrote, Ani Ma'amin, I have faith. We believe, O God, in you first of all, in you above all, and also in it, a Messiah, that you will send it. Ani Ma'amin, it will come. Ani Ma'amin, in spite of us, in spite of itself, it will come. And that's our faith, O God. Two words, a cry, just one. Ani Ma'amin. Be worthy of it, O Lord. Be worthy of us. Ani Ma'amin, for with you, in you, against you. Ani Ma'amin. Hear us, God. Please hear us. Ani Ma'amin, I have faith. But what does that mean? What does this mean to have faith? Faith is a kind of knowing, which just is. It can't be explained. Take, for example, water, right? One or two molecules of water in the palm of our hand is not going to feel like water. You can't even see one or two molecules. So how many molecules are necessary before we have the experience of wetness? I could assert that I don't believe in wetness because there's no wetness at all, just molecules. And yet, I honestly believe that none of us in our right minds could deny that there is the experience of wetness. And why do we know? At some point, we've experienced just the right number and configuration of molecules that we just know. Some might ask, how can I have faith if I do not believe in God? And in response, I would quote one of my rabbis, Josh Rose, who asks, in which God do you not believe in? The God in Jewish liturgy has contradictory characteristics. In the autumn, during Rosh Hashanah, our Jewish New Year, we repeatedly recite Avinu Malkeinu, which literally translates to Our Father, Our King. I'm not a big fan of that, so I move it to a little bit easier, Our Parent, Our Sovereign. And yet, this invocation calls upon various traits of God, such as loving and close like a parent, or distant and harsh like a ruler. What about the God of the Torah, the Bible? This God has no one singular quality and is, frankly, a little vengeful, right? We just, over at the synagogue, we just read about the part where Korach fought against Moses and the earth opened up, right? That might not be the God you believe in, right? The God of the Talmud, written about 1,700 years ago. These sages have no idea who this God is, which is why we have 63 books trying to figure out who this God is. And it's in Aramaic. So if you, like me, go through phases of not believing in God, I charge you with a question of which God it is in whom you do not believe. Faith, however, does not only deal with God. Faith requires a certain level of ownership and investment, a steadfastness, if you will. And this idea of steadfastness does come from the Hebrew Bible, from the first in the book of Exodus. You can imagine this massive band of Israelites trying to defeat their mortal enemy, the Amalekites. Moses holds up his staff in order for Israel to win. And if anyone has done this at the gym, at the Y, and you've held this position, it is really tiring, right? Like just even for a couple of moments, you're like, they're getting a little heavy, right? We sort of understand Einstein's relativity of time, right? So he's holding it up, but his hands grew heavy. And so they took a stone and he sat down, while Aaron on one side and Hur on the other supported his hands. Thus, he remained steadfast until the sun set. Emunah means steady. Emunah can also be translated as faith. The sentiment is also echoed in Isaiah. If you do not stand firm in your faith, surely you will not be established. Religions in general, and speaking personally, Judaism, they can provide us with a variety of ways to find spiritual steadfastness. We can study a book of scripture. We can enjoy services. We can engage in repairing the world. We can listen to a beautiful piece of music that transports us to a completely different plane. We can retreat into meditation. Faith can be accessed in so many ways, only if we're willing to try. Anima amin, I believe, in a power far greater than myself. I believe that the scripture and the millennia worth of teachings make me a better person. I believe with perfect faith in faith, that there will be more goodness in this world in years to come than what we find in the world today. And as the Talmudic sages of the 5th century said, the Messiah or Messianic age comes little by little, and then a little bit behind, and then a little bit more, and a little bit more. I believe we can encourage a little swiftness through our relationships with others. And those relationships begin at home, and then they extend to our communities. Also from the Talmud. Like I said, it's a big book. It's a really big book. We read, all Israel are guarantors from one another. So what does this tell us about faith and practice? That we're supposed to care about and care for one another. In 2013, when I was in seminary in Cincinnati, there were all these Jewish organizations which created programs throughout the year to highlight the celebration of Israel's 65th birthday. I had no idea there were 40 Jewish organizations in that town. I knew of the 6 synagogues and the JCC, the Jewish Community Center, because it doubled as my gym membership, not because of any other reason. So why these ones? Because that's where my seminary sent its students as indentured servants. I mean, they called us interns, but we really knew. So what about these 36 other places? I'd never heard of them. Maybe it was a deficiency in my exploration, or perhaps it was indicative of a larger systemic problem. Do you know how many places of worship there are in Hendersonville? Hundreds. And how many faith-based organizations, not just houses of worship? Dozens upon dozens. Right? Simple things such as PB&J, which stands for People Believing in Jesus, but hands out sandwiches. Right? Interfaith Assistance Ministries, IAM for short. Disclaimer, I am on the board, so I know about that one. It's a faith-based organization that has nothing to do with a worship service. And over 275 houses of worship in Hendersonville. Do the math. Each of us could basically start our own. We can begin to see from another example, something that I bring with me from my year in Israel, which was about 7 years ago. There were neighborhoods we were encouraged that said, don't go there. One place was Me'esh Harim. Except for this time when we were led on a field trip. This person used to live in Me'esh Harim, but moved away. And this trip stands in my mind among all of the other trips that we took because this person pointed out what each person wore and that how that identified them with what synagogue and what rabbi they followed. They said, look at that. There's a striped tunic, and it means such and such. Oh, there's a solid kaftan. This means that. Oh, I can see your ankle. And therefore, it means something else. Oh, and the stockings come up to your knee, and therefore. I don't remember the therefores. But what I found about this commentary was that it was divisive. We didn't go into this neighborhood, which was a Jewish neighborhood, to understand our similarities. We went in to point out our differences. We were not acting as one Jewish people. We were being tourists. Being exposed to what was altogether different and remote. And frankly, it was heartbreaking. Because we were Jews. Which means that we were similar to 0.2% of the world. Conversely, different than 99.8%. Did we really need to point out our differences? And this basic problem is illustrated in a famous joke. It tells about a Jewish man rescued on a deserted island. And it had 3 buildings. And then he's rescued. And they say, take me around your island. Give me the tour. He says, well, I have 3 buildings. That one's my home. That one's my synagogue. But what about this one? Oh, that's a synagogue I don't go to. The lesson I take from this is that we should not be tourists with people we are grouped with. We can celebrate our similarities and find unexpected connections. In the 2nd century CE, Shimeon ben Zoma said, who is wise? One who learns from every person. Let us all try to be wise. Ani ma'amin. I believe that building, honing, honoring these relationships within our own community and without will get us closer to that more perfect world. Anima Amin, that faith, that Jews and all peoples can live peacefully as a people anywhere in the world. And going back to that last quote, you'll note that Benzoma said, every person. He didn't qualify or limit his answer by suggesting we can only learn from one group, only if they look like me, only if they sound like me, only if they have a child like mine. I noticed that a candle was lit here. Jews also light the candles on the Sabbath. And my husband and I just enrolled our son in the Episcopal Church preschool. And they light candles there too. And there's sharing of bread in every place. We are so similar, far more similar than different. There's a third and final implication that emerges from these reflections on faith, and it came to light from a personally unforgettable experience. After a difficult summer of classes and chaplaincy rotation, my husband and I realized that our backyard was woefully neglected. There were weeds higher than the windows. I wish I were exaggerating. There were vines suffocating the bushes, and there were thorny roses gone wild. And our under-the-deck residents, a pair of groundhogs, they were too frightened of the jungle to come out. We dared not step foot in our backyard without full PPE, protective personal equipment, which I know a lot about from my work at a hazardous waste chemist. The mosquitoes were going to eat us alive. Something had to be done. But we were only two. And we were both students living on loans. Disposable income was not a luxury. So we called in reinforcements. From where did we find them? A church. A Baptist church. The relationship that made this possible started a few months earlier. A graduate student at my seminary, who also happened to be a Southern Baptist minister, as well as friend to both my husband and I, spoke so highly of his church and fiercely admired his pastor. I wanted to know what was so appealing, and he invited us for a visit. It was incredible. The friendships, the respect, the feelings of inclusion were palpable there as they are here. It's this inclusivity which spoke to me loud and clear. Members of that church were from all walks of life as they are here. Some were recently married, some recently baptized, and some recently drug-free. Everyone was equal. And so we found ourselves in this jungle, formerly known as our backyard, having no idea what to do. And so we asked our friend if he thought the members of his church would be willing to help us, essentially strangers, clear out the mess. And in return, we would donate a modest amount to his church, give them pizza and unlimited lemonade and gratitude. And they were excited about this opportunity. And it was an opportunity in their eyes. The men who came were in a drug recovery program. They were on the fringes of society. Their pastor helped them realize their faith in God. Their congregation built their faith in one another. And they showed us how faith in one another can help us live as a full community. For many Jews, we live among the 99.8%. We are the minority and in the diaspora. The biblical prophet Jeremiah wrote many years ago how to be a Jew in the diaspora. It was a how-to before, Judaism for dummies would come out. And he said, build houses, settle down, plant gardens, and eat what the gardens produce. Seek peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile, and pray to God on its behalf. For in its prosperity, you shall prosper. So we can see that interfaith relations don't have to be grand. They have to be part of everyday living. So while we should not discount the value and necessity of formal conversations, of formal learning, it's only the tip of the iceberg. What we really need are acts of respect, kindness, and faith with individuals who follow a different religious path, or none at all. We are where it starts. And I want to encourage you, invite you, go to an unfamiliar worship center, perhaps a church vastly unlike your own. There are plenty in this community. Or perhaps the synagogue down the way. I know the rabbi. I can get you in. Find a friend who's passionate about their clergy and their community and go together. And for those of us who are leaders in various avenues of our lives, be leaders in this way too. Show your peers that dialogue is just a start. Despite our differences, there's value and importance in working together, in breaking bread together. When one group has a specific need, often it can be met by another group. Then we must act. In order to usher in this better age, we have to be proactive. So more than with our mouths, we have to get our hands, our hearts, our souls invested. Anima Amin means that interfaith starts with each of us. Together we can do good, bring about more good in this world. Anima Amin, I have faith that each of us can make a difference in the lives of our neighbors. I have faith that as a Jew, I can be a guest and a welcoming host to every person. And I have faith that each of us is just one. We all matter. And I have this faith because I have to. A complete faith. Because in learning again and again what is worthwhile in life, I want to be steadfast in recognizing and realizing. We pray with faith for it to be so. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Jackson. Thank you. We have only begun to know the power that is in us if we would join our solitudes in the communion of struggle. We have already responded to that poetic phrase with our own cares of the spirit. Now we can respond in a much more practical way. Giving of our treasure is a way to join together, to strengthen this community that joins in the struggle together, to keep the lights on, to keep our beloved staff paid, to keep our programs going. Please give as you are willing and able. Our closing hymn is number 287, Faith of the Larger Liberty. Please stand as you're willing and able.
When people meet, endless possibilities emerge. New cultural experiences and openness to new ways of understanding and doing things. A special attention to the other and a sense of service beyond self-development. Today, this morning, let us take the light of the chalice out into the world and be beacons for openness, willingness to grow, enriching curiosity, and active cooperation. Thank you, Rabbi Rachel.
You may be seated.
Is our final benediction this morning. May your lives be full of laughter, and may you always sleep peacefully at night, May the sun shine its warmth upon you so that you can walk confidently, knowing that you are perfect just the way you are. May you always feel the love that surrounds you at this moment, and may you grow to return that love back into our world.